Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, April 28, 2006. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Jake Wallner.
Coming up on the KBOO Morning News, the annual Amnesty International Conference is being held in Portland this weekend. 10 states sue the EPA over global warming. And French President Jacques Chirac calls for Palestinian aid. Today is Portland area weather, mostly sunny, high 75 to 80. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy, lows 45 to 50, light winds.
Violence against women, human rights abuses at home and abroad, massacres, and civil war in Darfur. These are the topics headlining the annual conference of Amnesty International USA being held in downtown Portland this weekend, as the city welcomes more than 1,000 human rights activists. The theme of this year's conference for the organization is Make Some Noise, Human Rights at High Volume. Amnesty officials say the goal for the event is to draw attention to abusive and degrading practices that are dominating world headlines this year. Organizers said the holding the event in Portland fits the ideals of area residents. The conference will include workshops about ending the death penalty, building human rights movements, and environmental issues in third world countries. Today, Amnesty will hold a 4 to 5 p.m. rally in Pioneer Courthouse Square to denounce torture. Myra Sorvino, an Academy Award-winning actress, will be the keynote speaker at Saturday's afternoon session. Also featured will be a Saturday night concert at the Roseland Theater, featuring Incubus, The Night Watchmen, Collective Soul, and Suzanne Vega.
The Oregon Investment Council has approved putting $400 million worth of public employee retirement money in private equity firms. This week's decision was the most recent by the council to invest in private equity, which take big sums of money from institutional customers like state pension funds and invest in high-profile corporate buyouts and real estate, as well as venture capital deals. Since January 1st, the council has committed to investing $2.6 billion with private equity firms. The council's been directing more money toward private equity because of the outsized returns it has generated in the past. It also is doing so at a time successful private equity firms are demanding faster investment decisions. A slew of new managers are trying to establish relationships with the council, and the council has a new chairman and two new members. Meanwhile, a hot equity market has spurred managers to liquidate investments in their older funds and return capital and profit to investors. That means as fast as the council can invest money in the market, companies such as Colbert, Cravis, Roberts, and Texas Pacific Group are funneling money back to the council from past investments. This from the Oregonian.
The administrator of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission resigned from her post yesterday after being arrested and charged with drunken driving, according to Portland police. Teresa Kaiser submitted her resignation this morning via email to the five-member commission. The commission appoints the administrator, not Kulongoski, but its members are named by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Police spokesman Detective Paul Dolby said Kaiser was stopped Saturday night near Portland's Ross Island Bridge. Her blood alcohol level was not immediately available. Kulongoski described Kaiser's arrest as a human tragedy, but said dismissal is not necessarily what should happen to any public employee arrested for drunken driving. Oregon is one of 18 control states for liquor, which means the state owns the beverages at some point in the distribution process. This from the Oregonian.
A late migration of spring Chinook salmon in the Columbia River appears to be gaining strength, but the tardy trickle of fish through the Bonneville Dam fish ladders is the latest on record. It has fisheries biologists stumped. Is the prize stock of the Columbia Basin fish abnormally low due to ocean or river conditions, or is the run simply loitering in the river below the dam? On Monday, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers removed massive steel grates in front of two fish ladders to see if the grates were deterring fish. The sea lion's exclusionary devices, or sleds, were set in place in February to keep pinnipeds from decimating salmon when they're most vulnerable. But some fishery experts worried the grates were deterring fish as well. The grates vary from 10 to 15 feet wide and 30 to 36 feet high. Spring should not generally keep to a schedule, but occasionally throw everyone off with their arrival. No state, local, or federal official has looked at other environmental management factors influencing salmon runs over the long term. This from the Oregonian.
Two men vying to replace fellow Democrat Mark Haas as representative of Oregon House District 27 offer party voters fervent and similar assertions about reforming taxation and refurbishing the state's education and health care systems. Both Mike Bohan and Tobias Reed agree that legislators should raise more to pay for education by abolishing the state kicker tax refunds that corporations get during good economic times. Haas, who was first elected in 2000, decided not to run again. The winner of the May 16th Democratic primary will face Dominic Biggie, vice president of Beaverton Foods. In the fall, Biggie is unopposed on Republican ballots. The House district extends from Cooper Mountain east to include a small wedge of the West Hills in Multnomah County. It has more than 32,000 voters, about 39% of them Democrats, 35% Republicans, and nearly all the rest independents.
Oregon counties that rely on federal safety net payments to replace revenues from diminished timber sales could get a one-year reprieve under a plan unveiled Wednesday by Senator Gordon Smith. A six-year law that guarantees the safety net payments is set to expire in September, but Smith has proposed including the one-year extension in an emergency spending bill to pay for the war in Iraq. Senator Ron Wyden is a co-sponsor of the amendment. The amendment would steer $523 million to counties in 39 states with federal forest lands, but none would receive more than the rural counties of Oregon, which take about half the national total. It's still unclear when a vote on the proposal might happen. The Senate is expected to work on the bill at least until next week. Victory could be elusive, though. President Bush has threatened to veto the spending bill if it exceeds $92 billion, and that could make it difficult for Smith to gather the 60 votes needed for passage. If Smith succeeds, he could buy valuable time for Oregon's delegation to Congress. Members want a six-year renewal of the current payments, but they face daunting odds given budget competition in an election year. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Senator Ron Wyden held up Senate debate for almost 5 hours yesterday to force a vote on an amendment that would increase what oil companies pay to extract oil and gas from government-owned land. But just minutes after telling colleagues he would stay all night if he had to, Wyden gave up the fight, acknowledging that a vote on his amendment was unlikely. Wyden wanted to attach his amendment to a bill the Senate is debating on money for Hurricane Katrina relief efforts. His measure would eliminate a perk that oil companies get even when oil prices are high. Under a law enacted last year, oil companies pay the government a reduced rate for oil and gas retrieved from government land. Wyden wants to eliminate the reduced rate when oil prices exceed $55 per barrel. With oil prices currently higher than $70 per barrel, Wyden said oil companies don't need the benefit of a reduced rate. He introduced the amendment just before 11 a.m. Eastern Time and did not allow business to proceed until 3:30 p.m. Under Senate rules, Wyden had the option of holding the floor as long as he could stand once he had introduced his amendment. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Amnesty International's new leader, Larry Cox, says that for American human rights advocates, these are tough times. That's why he's back on the front lines after more than a decade away from the organization. Allegations of torture on the part of U.S. agents and military personnel in Iraq and at Guantanamo Bay and reports of prisoners spirited by jet to secret prisons have undercut the work of human rights workers worldwide. Not only have the allegations given the United States a black eye, but they also weaken the nation's security. Cox becomes executive director of the U.S. section of the Worldwide Human Rights Group on Monday, succeeding Dr. William Schultz as the group holds its annual general meeting this weekend in Portland. Today, the group will sponsor a rally in downtown Portland on the second anniversary of the release of photos of U.S. military personnel abusing prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison.
A U.S. court has acquitted a group of 18 grandmothers of disorderly conduct for staging a rally against the Iraq War outside a military recruiting center. The defendants, known as the Granny Peace Brigade, were arrested in October and charged on two counts. The courtroom burst into cheers and applause as the judge gave his verdict. The group's co-founder said it was encouraging to know you can still protest legally in the U.S. and said more demonstrations were being planned. Joan Wild also said she hoped the case would motivate other senior citizens who might otherwise believe they were too old to take part in demonstrations. This from the BBC.
Two white teenagers severely beat and sodomized a Hispanic 16-year-old boy who they believed had tried to kiss a Hispanic 12-year-old girl at a party. The attackers forced the boy out of the Saturday night house party, beat him and sodomized him with a plastic pipe, shouting anti-Hispanic epithets. The boy was in critical condition yesterday, 5 days after the attack. A police officer said investigators believe the attack was prompted by the age gap between the beating victim and the younger girl. Harris County Prosecutor Mike Trent said the attackers also cut the victim with a knife. They then poured bleach over the boy, apparently to destroy DNA evidence, and left him for dead. Authorities said he was not discovered until 12 hours after the attack. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
A Senate inquiry into the government's Hurricane Katrina failures ripped the Bush administration anew and urged the scrapping of the nation's disaster response agency. But with a new hurricane season just weeks away, senators conceded that few, if any, of their proposals could become reality in time. The bipartisan investigation into one of the worst natural disasters in the nation's history singled out President Bush and the White House as appearing indifferent to the devastation until 2 days after the storm hit. It said Homeland Security Department either misunderstood federal disaster plans or refused to follow them. It said New Orleans for years had neglected to prepare for large-scale emergencies. The report concluded that the suffering that continued in the days and weeks after the storm passed did not happen in vacuum. Instead, it continued longer than it should have because was, in some cases, exasperated by the failure of government at all levels to plan, prepare for, and respond aggressively to the storm. It was titled Hurricane Katrina, A Nation Still Unprepared, Sober Words for the Future.
10 members of the U.S. House of Representatives will file a lawsuit tomorrow seeking to block implementation of a budget law signed by President Bush, according to Raw Story. In February, the president signed a version of the Deficit Reduction Act that never passed the House. The draft signed by Bush omitted provisions from the version that passed the House that required the government to pay for 36 months of durable medical equipment rentals for those who qualified. The version Bush signed allows just 13 months, a difference of 23 months rental and $2 billion in spending. According to the Constitution of the United States, the same version of a bill must pass both houses of Congress before it can be signed by the president to become law. The plaintiffs seeking to block the law are all ranking Democrats, members of the committee affected by the differences. According to earlier published accounts, House Republican leadership notified the president that it had not passed the House of Representatives before the president went ahead and signed the bill on February 8th. This from Raw Story.
Before bolting from the Senate chamber, Republican Senator Pete Domenici shouted at Senator Ron Wyden, "I just violated the rules." Domenici had interrupted Wyden's introduction of an amendment under the pretense that he was attempting to ask a question. Rather, he blasted the senator's plan, after doing so announcing, "I just violated the rules. I didn't ask a question. I gave a speech. I hope you listened." Wyden had been on the Senate floor for nearly 5 hours under Senate rules. A lawmaker can push a vote on his or her amendment so long as they can stand on the floor. The Wyden Amendment would eliminate royalty relief subsidies for drilling on government land if oil prices exceed $55 per barrel. He has argued that the program was implemented when oil prices were at $10 per barrel and have since come to exceed $75 per barrel. President Bush has gone on record stating that these particular subsidies were no longer necessary. Domenici argues that eliminating the subsidies won't save taxpayers any money. Wyden claims independent audits say it could save taxpayers billions. Republicans have so far indicated that they would block efforts to bring the amendment to a vote. Wyden has called this a signal of their intent to maintain the subsidy program.
Senator Russ Feingold introduced an amendment yesterday demanding redeployment of U.S. troops currently in Iraq by the end of 2006. This, according to Raw Story again. The amendment is attached to an emergency supplemental appropriations bill currently being considered to fund ongoing military operations in Iraq. This is the third time Feingold has introduced or taken part in writing legislation requesting a troop drawback in June of 2005. Feingold introduced a resolution calling for a flexible timetable for an Iraq withdrawal. In November, 40 senators voted in support of a similar amendment. The lawmaker more recently made waves by calling for the censure of President Bush over a National Security Agency warrantless spying program. The Appropriations Amendment does not call for a complete withdrawal of all U.S. personnel.
The chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence has denied Democratic attempts to interview Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, former CIA Director George Tenet, and two former senior aides to erstwhile Secretary of State Colin Powell, according to Raw Story. Intelligence Vice Chairman Jay Rockefeller sought to interview Rice, Tenet, and Powell's aides as part of a Senate inquiry into whether public statements by administration officials about Iraq were corroborated by intelligence information. Recent reports suggest that the Bush administration was warned that Iraq did not have substantive weapons of mass destruction. Rockefeller expressed his desire to interview roughly 20 administration officials, though the names of the officials cited in the letter were not made public until today. In addition to Rice and Tenet, Rockefeller sought access to Lawrence Wilkerson, formerly Powell's chief of staff, and Richard Armitage, formerly deputy secretary of state. Rockefeller's spokesman said the senator wants committee staff to interview Powell aides about the secretary's speech to the United Nations, in which he outlined Iraq's alleged threat.
10 states fired a new legal salvo at the federal government yesterday in a long-running court battle over global warming and pollution from power plants. The states, joined by environmental groups, sued the Environmental Protection Agency over its decision not to regulate carbon dioxide pollution as a contributor to global warming. New York, California, Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, New Mexico, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Wisconsin filed the lawsuit in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit Court. The states, led by New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer, want the government to require tighter pollution controls on the newest generation of power plants. Also suing the government are the cities of Washington and New York, as well as Environmental Defense, Natural Resources Defense Council, and the Sierra Club.
Pro-immigration activists say a national boycott and marches planned for May 1st will flood U.S. streets with millions of Latinos to demand amnesty for illegal immigrants and shake the ground under Congress as it debates reform. Such a massive turnout could make for the largest protest since the civil rights era of the 1960s, though not all Latinos nor their leaders were comfortable with such militancy, fearing a backlash in Middle America. Jorge Rodriguez, a union official who helped organize earlier rallies, says there will be 2 to 3 million people hitting the streets in Los Angeles alone. We're going to close down Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Tucson, Phoenix, and Fresno. Immigration has split Congress, the Republican Party, and public opinion. Conservatives want the estimated 12 million illegal immigrants classified as felons and a fence built along the Mexican border.
Federal regulators are scrambling to reassure the nation's 42,000 coal miners that the air packs they rely on in an emergency will work, even though the sole survivor of the Sago mine disaster says four of his cruise devices malfunctioned. Congressmen and some of the Sago victims' relatives, meanwhile, are calling on government to upgrade air packs and require the use of tracking devices and communication systems to make sure West Virginia's heartache is never repeated.
Four U.S. Marines have appeared in court in the Philippines charged with raping a local woman. This according to the BBC. They refused to enter pleas, but the court recorded not guilty pleas on their behalf. They faced the death penalty if found guilty. They have denied raping a young woman in a van outside the former U.S. naval base of Subic Bay. Human rights groups shouted protests as the defendants made their way into the Manila courtroom. The court earlier threw out a Justice Department motion to reduce charges against three of the four Marines. Philippines Justice Secretary Raul Gonzalez had argued only one defendant should face the full charge. That charge carries the death penalty. Gonzalez said the others would be charged as accessories and face 20 years in prison. The four entered the courtroom in civilian clothes. They have been in custody at the U.S. Embassy after the U.S. refused to hand them over until the end of the trial.
Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil have agreed to push on with plans for a gas pipeline from Venezuela to Argentina. Leaders of the three countries held a one-day summit in Sao Paulo, Brazil, to discuss the project as well as other plans for regional integration. Critics say the pipeline is overambitious and too costly. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez says the project could create 1 million jobs. At the summit, he called for the expansion of plans to include Bolivia. Bolivia's own gas reserves are second in the continent to Venezuela's. The regional leaders also discussed ways of solving a crisis in the Andean community trade bloc. Venezuela has said it's pulling out of the bloc now that a number of member countries have signed trade deals with the U.S. Bolivia, Cuba, and Venezuela will sign a trade agreement of the people in Cuba tomorrow in an attempt to counter free trade agreements Latin American countries are signing with the U.S. government. This from the BBC.
Work has begun on the longest oil pipeline in Russia, 2 days after President Putin changed the proposed route to avoid approaching Lake Baikal. When completed, it will carry oil from eastern Siberia to the Pacific Ocean for consumers across the Asia-Pacific region, including China. When the project is completed, it will be the longest pipeline in the world's largest country, and it will supply the growing demand for oil in China and the rest of the Asia-Pacific region. This from the BBC's Asia-Pacific desk.
At least two people have been killed and others hurt after a rally by sacked soldiers in East Timor turned violent. Police fired tear gas to try and disperse hundreds of soldiers and their supporters who attacked shops and burned cars in the capital city of Dili. The protest was the most volatile of several staged this week against the sacking of 600 soldiers who went on strike claiming discrimination. They went absent without leave last month to protest against their working conditions and what they called favoritism in promotions. The government sacked all 600 of them, more than a third of the total defense force. Many of the troops, who are veterans of the 25-year fight for independence from Indonesia, feel they have not been given the recognition they deserve for their past sacrifices.
Nepal's legislatures headed back to work today after a 4-year hiatus that culminated in bloody protests against the king's rule. But the hard-won moment was marred by concerns about the health of the prime minister tapped to lead the nation back to democracy. Gurija Prasad Korela was to have been sworn in earlier today, but the ceremony was postponed until later in the day on news he was suffering from a lung ailment. It was unclear if he would be able to attend first session. The reinstated parliament got a bit of breathing space when communist insurgents announced a 3-month ceasefire yesterday. The rebels had teamed up with Nepal's main political parties during 3 weeks of protests and a general strike that forced King Gayendra to return power to the parliament he dismissed in 2002. A small group of Maoist rebels and supporters gathered less than a mile from where Parliament was to meet, waving small red banners bearing the communist hammer. The gathering was a sign that the Maoists, outlawed by previous governments, believe they will have a role in the new government after backing the protests. Even without an immediate threat, the challenges are enormous for legislators returned to power by hundreds of thousands of pro-democracy protesters who now demand real change in this near-feudal country where the most eke out pitiful living as landless farmers.
French President Jacques Chirac has called for international aid to the Palestinians to continue, according to the BBC. Chirac said the World Bank should set up a fund to pay the salaries of Palestinian officials. This comes after the US and EU cut off direct aid to the Hamas-led Palestinian Authority, which is struggling to pay the wages of more than 1,000 workers. Chirac was speaking after meeting Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Washington and the EU define Hamas as a terrorist organization and say they will not consider relations with the Palestinian Authority under its control unless it renounces violence and recognizes Israel. Following talks with Abbas in Paris, Chirac suggested the World Bank could pay Palestinian Authority officials directly, thereby bypassing Hamas. Chirac's offer is quoted as saying that the creation of a special account to receive funds intended to pay the salaries should be studied, and the sooner the better. This from the BBC.
At least 21 Iraqi insurgents and 7 soldiers have been killed in fighting in the city of Bakuba, during which at least 43 insurgents were captured. Bakuba was put under curfew after the attacks yesterday on police stations and checkpoints in the city and surrounding province of Diyala. At least 2 civilians also died in the fighting, but the number is certainly much higher. Insurgents used mortars, rocket-propelled grenades, and small arms to attack 5 police checkpoints, a police station, and an Iraqi army headquarters in Bakuba. Diyala Province Governor Rashid Al-Mulla said the attackers had planned to seize control of Bakuba's southwest and southwest entrances.
As Malaysia prepares to pick its first astronaut, the country's space agency is hunting for solutions to the problems it expects devout Muslims to face while in orbit, such as which direction to pray. This according to Reuters. One of the 5 pillars of Islam requires the faithful to pray 5 times a day and to face Mecca, the birthplace of Islam, while doing so. Astronauts aboard spaceships could have difficulty meeting these requirements. There are 3 Muslims on the shortlist of 4 candidates, from which Malaysia must pick 2 in May to begin training as astronauts. The program was launched, no pun intended, 2 years ago after Russia offered the country a free trip into space aboard a Soyuz spacecraft. The trip meant to sweeten a deal for Malaysia's $900 million purchase of Russian-made fighter planes. We'll see the best man or woman blasting off with Russian astronauts in October of 2007 to spend 6 to 8 days aboard the International Space Station. Following Earth time and facing in the direction of Earth are the key elements to solving the problem. This according to Reuters.
The world's nuclear watchdog, which reports to the UN Security Council today, is likely to confirm Iran has flouted demands to stop enriching uranium as a verdict that could unleash moves to hit Tehran with sanctions. International Atomic Energy Agency Chief Mohammad El-Baradei was also expected to say Iran was still stalling IAEA inquiries into its nuclear work. The other salient issue cited in a 30-day council deadline for Iranian cooperation that expires today. But Iranian defiance has only hardened over the last month, with Tehran saying it has enriched enough uranium to fuel power plants for the first time and is researching a machine to enrich even faster, adding that its nuclear drive was irreversible. In the 2 days before the report, Iran has vowed to hit U.S. targets worldwide if attacked by Washington, which has not ruled out war as a last resort to rein in Tehran. And Iran's U.N. ambassador said yesterday Iran will not comply with an expected Security Council resolution aimed at curbing its nuclear ambitions because its program passed no threat to international peace and security, according to Reuters.
An explosion ripped through a bus in the northern Indian state of Punjab today. 12 of the people injured were hospitalized, and the explosion at the city's main bus station occurred as the bus was about to leave for the town of Nangal, also in Punjab state. Dozens of people waiting to board other buses fled in panic. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack.
This was the KBOO Morning News for Friday, April 28, 2006. Portland area weather today, mostly sunny, highs 75 to 80. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy, lows 45 to 50, light wind. Saturday, showers likely, cooler, highs around 60. Saturday night, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy, colder, lows to 35 to 40. Sunday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then mostly sunny, highs 65 to 70, partly cloudy, lows 40 to 45. Thanks for joining us for this morning's news. This morning's newscast was edited by Becca Bartelson and Chris Andre. Our engineer is Becca Bartelson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Jake Wallner.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up this